If he's not, I'll try back in a bit. 'Cause I'm a minute early.
I know.
According to satellite time.
How's it going?
It's going good. How are
You
you?
got good. You got quite a stack of X-Men comics the other day.
Yeah, it's from the Reed collection.
Oh my
So
God, that was a big stack.
Reed is probably at a point where I'll be in, I don't know, 20 years where I just want to get rid of it. So I am taking pieces of his collection in bulk.
Is he a very old man?
No. He's probably where, I don't know how old he is, but he's at the point where he's probably saying, "What am I going to do with all this shit?" And that can arrive at any time. Any it
Like
could
Daryl
happen,
years
but it
ago.
could happen between your 40s or your 30s, or it could happen when you're 80.
Right.
But it's going to happen. I mean, unless you have somebody to leave it to that wants it.
I was telling Daryl, my plan is to just say, okay, kids, I can't handle this anymore. Do you guys want it, or do you want to keep it? Do you want to sell it? What do you want to do? That type of thing, when I get older, but
Do you see
we'll
any
see.
interest in it, do you think, with your kids? 'Cause they're at the
I'm
age
not.
where
I really don't see like the interest that I had
Yeah.
when I was six. Zach has more interest than Allie, but it's more of a passing interest. Like if he sees a certain comic that looks cool, we might, he might want it, and we'll read it. And sometimes, like I remember one, like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle like miniseries that was more geared towards kids. We
Yeah.
must have read through it like four or five times, but then it doesn't like he doesn't have that like I had where, oh my God, I need to start buying all, I need to get more comic books and read other stories. Like he really liked that story, and then he moved on and did some other things. You know what
Yeah.
I mean?
But it's
Yeah.
a different time for them too,
It
because
is.
it would be different for us, I'm sure. Like,
Yeah.
I do not think if we grew up with what we have today, that we would be the fans we are today.
Probably not.
I mean, if anything, we would definitely be doing it digitally. We're like, why are we collecting all this paper when I can get it on demand? Do you know what I mean? I mean, it just, I mean, let's think logically, but there's something retro and there's something that you get when you read the paper copy if it, you know, for me, it makes me feel like a kid again. But,
Well, here's my only thing though. And I've told Daryl this several times, is that I refuse. I am not going to pay more money than what I'm paying now for just having digital copies.
yeah.
And that's the bottom line, is that DCBS, you're getting 50, between 35 and 50% off. I'd be getting is like if I want the comics right away, I'd be getting no discount at all.
Yeah, that's insane. But at the same time, if you were able to shift your paradigm, like you did do at one point, at one point you were the Wednesday warrior that went and got his comics every Wednesday. And then you said, "Oh, I'm going to mail order," and now you're delayed every 2 weeks.
Yeah, that was tough. That was
Well,
tough the
I
first
know
3
it's
weeks.
tough, but you adjusted, right? Well, now take it a little bit further and say, let's wait 6 months.
I know.
And then take it a little bit further if you want to go to DC, let's wait a year because they're going to be releasing new releases every year. So
Yeah, and
they'll
I
be
have
a
to
year
say,
off. So if you adjust it and you think about it, you'll have enough to read to last you that time. Do you know what I mean? I mean,
Yeah,
so
you're right.
I'm thinking it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. I mean, it makes sense for me, like logically, if I put my engineering brain together, I could easily adapt because I don't read things on time like you do. Do you know what I mean? You at least read them in a timely manner. You you at least get your package and then you have them read by the time the next package comes.
Right.
But for me, I don't do that. So
You know
it's
what the thing is for me too, and I know it's the same for you because you've experienced it many times with reading stuff on Marvel Unlimited or whatever, is that yes, obviously I want to read and enjoy the stories. That's why I'm buying them, but the collecting aspect is part of it too, where I don't want to just like kind of lease or rent the stories. I want to own the stories and
That's
actually have them. You know what I mean? And like you said, like filling holes. Like you see, oh, I don't own this yet. Yeah, you might have read it, but you don't own it. And that's like part of the fun for me. And I know that it is for you as well.
Oh yeah, it's not just the reading and enjoying. It's I have it physically, and it's the collector mentality. It's like
Right.
I have this, and it's like something to achieve and like goals to achieve that you enjoy.
Yeah, oh, and I love it. And don't get me wrong, if we didn't enjoy reading them, I mean I wouldn't buy them, but I do, and it's something that I just love, and I love the collecting aspect and going to a show or something like that and finding things that either I've never seen before or filling in holes for collections and stuff. It's just that's a huge amount of fun for me.
It is for
That's
me
never going to
too.
go away.
It never goes away. A matter of fact,
No.
I was reading something from Heroic Publishing, which only distributes through Indie Planet, and I was like, man, I really like this. I think I want to go buy more.
Which one was that? Because I saw
This
you.
one was the one that I didn't plan on buying. This was League of Champions.
Oh, okay. Because I haven't tried any of them. Do you recommend them? They're pretty entertaining.
I am extremely impressed with I'm extremely impressed with the print to order. Is Chris there?
Chris, are you there?
I
Oh
just
my
wanted
God.
I just wanted to
He's a
make sh
ninja.
no, I just wanted to make sure because I didn't know if I needed to call him back. But I'm extremely impressed with the way the print to order works. In other words, I ordered like on a Wednesday and I had it by Monday. Do you know what I mean? It was pretty fast.
Wow, that's very fast.
Yeah, it was very fast. The website sucks. Like it sucks balls. Like to see previews, like it's really hard to like usually you want to click on a series like I want to see this and I want all the comics, but it takes you like individually to each issue and then it's hard to see the entire series.
Yeah.
The interface just blows, but the experience of getting the product and what the product is, especially with what that Christopher Mills is doing. Like he's doing like a Bronze Age a love affair in his line. These are like 60-page giant Bronze Age books, and he's putting out I think one every quarter. Those are amazing. They
Yeah,
look
I
amazing.
definitely want to try them out. I just haven't had the chance to go on the
But
website and look.
because of shipping, like I would recommend buying at least four or five things. So
Okay.
you're not paying for shipping of one book. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're getting a something worth value as far as shipping cost.
That makes sense.
But Heroic Publishing used to be in previews until fairly recently. I mean, well, probably 5 to 10 years.
No, I'm not familiar with them at all.
I don't have too many of them. The one I'm familiar with is a book called Flare, and they had this comic called The Champions, and I've read some Flare and I have it and I've enjoyed it, but I never pursued it. But now that I'm seeing the ads in their comic books for Flare, I'm like, hey, I wonder if I should pick up some more of these.
Right, it's gearing you to
It
get
makes
more.
no sense. I have enough to read. I mean, Chris knows this. He's seen. I have enough to read to last a lifetime. So, I don't need more, but I want more. It's a compulsion. It's like I love have a library I could go to at any time and check out with no check-in. I don't have to check it
Right.
in.
Yeah. Now, guess what? See if you can guess what kind. I don't think that you can, but what comic book series I just bought an issue of for the first time in 23 years that is kind of not really, really your and Bill's fault, but kind of because you've talked about it on and off over the past months. Even ongoing, you guys will discuss this particular series.
Oh, this is weird.
And it's never been relaunched. Okay, I'll give you a couple clues. It's never been relaunched. I haven't bought it for 23 years. I don't know if I can give you another hint or not.
Is it a main publisher? Is it a DC or Marvel or indie?
It's not DC or Marvel.
Oh, we talk about so much shit. I don't
I know.
like.
It's Image. I'll tell you it's Image.
Oh, Bloodstrike?
One more guess.
Spawn.
Yes. So I saw in the previews that like I think that Jim, oh, it's like Jim Lee's gonna draw like 300 or something like that, or
Yeah.
do a cover for 300, and I'm like, you know what? I haven't bought this in a million years. I know that Bill and Mike talk about it every once in a while. I've also kind of been getting into the old 90s Image where like I read all this, you know, I read Stormwatch for the first time, and I want Wildcats and Gen 13. I've been getting copies of those, so I'm like, you know what, let me pick up. So I went to my comic shop. They had 288 and 289. I thought that those were probably the two most recent issues, but I can see that it's not, so I don't know why they only had those two issues, but they did. So now I gotta at least track down from 290 to whatever the most recent issue that's
Yeah,
been out.
the thing of Spawn though is like after issue 100, it has low print run. I mean, you're talking about 30 to 40K,
Yeah,
and
I'm
there's a
not gonna
there's
try
a
to fill in my
there is
run.
a lot of fans that don't sell their shit. So
Yeah.
the prices are at least in double digits. Like
Yeah.
you might spend 20 on an issue or 30 on an issue. I know this because I'm filling gaps. The only reason I haven't said claimed victory yet is I haven't audited the upstairs closet, which I really need to get to because I could have a full run, but I could be missing stuff. But the thing that's Spawn has people excited now. They're coming out with multiple covers, and
I see that.
not only is the gimmick, he does a black and white version, and the black and white version has a totally different cover. Like in the latest one, me and Bill were talking about it. It has a Violator's head on the cover in black and white, and it looks amazing.
Interesting. Yeah, no, like I said, I'm not gonna, at least this point, I'm not planning on filling in the gap. My last issue had been issue 53, and I hadn't bought one since.
And it's hot.
But
It's
I want
doing
to at least get it, you know,
it's
from
doing
now on.
like
I'm
a
gonna.
Walking Dead crawl. Like it's coming from nowhere, and all of a sudden it's crawling up the charts. A matter of fact, I predict that it's gonna pass Walking Dead, like in sales, within the next
Wow.
year.
Wow.
If the trends keep going the way they are, it's going to pass it.
What do you think that's due to?
I think quality, and I think that the fact that he's doing something as a variant that isn't usually done, like it has a totally different cover, and you get the same issue in black and white. So you could see like the color process. You could put them side by side and look at it. It's pretty amazing.
That's
But
cool.
I think the quality of Spawn, I'm biased when it comes to Spawn and Savage Dragon. Those are like two that I just adore. I
Yeah.
mean, I have to work. I finished my Stormwatch. I pretty much finished the Liefeld, except for some things like all the ones with blood in it. I think I own
That's a lot
Brigade,
of comics,
Bloodstrike,
though.
Youngblood, anything. Well, it's not really a lot because he doesn't publish a lot. But I still need to get like Glory, and I think I just finished the original Prophet. But
Oh.
I've been working on the Liefeld stuff. I'm really excited to read the Major X to see what that's like. But I'm a Liefeld guy. I just he comes across as a jerk, like somebody I wouldn't want to hang out with. But his passion when his passion is like his excitement when he's like there, I'm like I'm all over that. So I like parts of. I
Yeah,
just
I
don't
hear you.
like I just don't like his kicking and screaming when he throws a tantrum like a
Yeah, it,
kid.
personally, he's easy to root against, like
Yes,
as a
yes.
personality. Yeah.
Yeah. But like when he's not throwing a tantrum like a child, he's pretty freaking amazing to listen to. Like his excitement matches my excitement. Like I just like get thrilled to listen to him. And I like all Like the 90s are fascinating to me because it was a time of extreme stress. Like I was awake 20 hours a day studying, and it like things like Valiant and Image, even though they were different, like one concentrated on artwork and one concentrated on story. That's how I usually they made like a perfect blend to me. Like what I needed to decompress in college. Like I needed that. And sometimes a lighter Image book that had, I don't know, 100 words in it, it wasn't that much, was what I needed. Like just to decompress between two classes or something.
That makes
And then
sense. That makes
sometimes at
sense.
night I needed a Valiant comic to give me more. And I don't know. In conjunction, they worked really good. So, like, I've been trying to get at least all the Image superhero universes. I'm working on Gen 13 now.
When I was at the con, any Gen 13, and I actually found 0, 1, and 3, I think.
Yeah.
So I was happy to find some of those lower numbers, although it's probably similar that some of those mid to higher numbers maybe had lower print runs. But I'm not finding a lot in like the dollar bins, to be
Yeah,
honest with you.
you won't find a lot of them. And I think people are really actively searching them out. Like Savage
Yeah.
Dragon's a bear to find too.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of those. I've seen
Yeah.
very few spawn.
And it gets worse like as the series goes on. Like the print runs just get ridiculous.
And I think probably 10 years ago, probably could have found all of those in like 50-cent bins, but I
Oh
think that
yeah,
it's kind of
like
flipped
right
now.
after the collapse, man. They were
Yeah.
like dime store
There were
books.
boxes of
Yeah,
just
boxes
those.
of them because of the speculator market. Yeah. But anyway, that's enough of Image. But it is kind of retro 'cause it's still old.
Well, it's the 90s.
Yeah. A matter of fact, I put in my latest order to my comic shop, and it's got code name Strike Force.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm completing that finally. And what is the other one? Death Blow or not Death Blow? God, I can't think of it. Liefeld's Death Wolf, Blood Wolf.
Blood Wolf. Yeah, I'm
Yeah,
not
it's got
familiar
to
with
have
that one.
blood in it. It came
Blood
from
or
his
death or.
Maximum. Press line.
Yeah, that's cool. Chris, how are you today?
Not bad. How are you guys doing?
I'm good.
I'm good. Rob's full of energy today, man. I hope you're
Yeah.
ready.
Yeah, you guys are excited.
Yeah.
I just love comics, man. It's like an adrenaline rush. It's like in Pulp Fiction when that girl's dying and
Oh,
John
yeah.
Travolta gets that shot of adrenaline and drives it right into her heart. That's how I feel almost like 24/7 around comics.
That's all you
Boom!
need are comic books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just.
That's right.
I. They're a source of extreme peace for me. In the rabbit holes, because I could just see an advertisement and I'm like, what is this?
The same thing happened to me when I read one of my comics I'm going to cover today. I saw an ad. I'm like, I didn't know that they ever had a 4-issue mini on this. It was a 4-issue mini, I guess, on Deadshot by Ostrander. I'm like, I've never even seen this before. So I'm going to have to look for this now.
Really? A Deadshot by Ostrander? I remember the Deadshot by Christos Gage.
Yeah, it's 4 issues, 1988.
I have it. I just don't remember
it. I don't have it. I've never even seen it before. I've never seen these covers before in my life.
I've come across it online, just browsing comics from the era, but...
Ross Pencils or Luke Ross or Luke something?
Luke McDonald, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Is it, I don't know if you guys, you probably don't remember if it was any good or not, but I want to...
anything with Deadshot is good.
With it being Ostrander, I would think it would be good. I mean, that's right around the same time. Yeah.
For Suicide Squad, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen those covers. I haven't read it, but I've looked at a lot of the DC comics from the late 80s because of like my interest in that time period. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm sure it's good though. I mean,
I'm gonna check it out, see if I can locate those issues for not too much.
Buy with confidence.
Okay. Yeah, I get those at my comic shop for cheap.
Yeah, I don't think they would be that expensive.
Yeah, they're not that sought out.
Okay. And most DC comics from that era aren't expensive.
And you know, I've totally I've been, now this has been how many years, like at least 2 years of like a new focus with like getting those era, like 80s era DC rather than
Marvel. do you have a full Suicide Squad run?
No.
That's what you need to work on, man.
I have been getting all those trades as they've been coming out, and I think another one was solicited a month or two ago, I think, up to Volume 8. So I've been reading a lot of them through there. I think I only own like the first maybe 20 issues, maybe not even quite that many.
I'd highly recommend that series.
It's a great series.
And the Spectre, well beyond that now. You're talking John Ostrander. The Spectre is really good. And his Manhunter run, he did a Manhunter he does a lot of stuff with his wife passed away, but her name was Kim Yale.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's who the co-writer is for Deadshot.
Yeah, they did a lot of work together, so you'll see her name on a lot of the credits.
Oh, okay.
Checkmate is a pretty good gem from that era, too. It's pretty damn awesome.
I've gotten a handful of issues in the 50 cent bins for that, but I haven't read them yet.
Checkmate, Suicide Squad, Manhunter. Did you ever read the Mark Andraco Manhunter?
Mm-mm, nope.
Oh my God, you got to get that. If you're a JSA fan, you need to get that. Because there's so much legacy, and it ties into like Young Allies and all kinds of like DC properties like Iron Munro, and I don't know, it's a gem.
That's really cool to know.
The Atom, yeah. All right, hang on, Atom.
I gotta write some of this down. So, Andraco Manhunter, you said, right?
Mark Andraco Manhunter. Okay. That was one title that they brought back because of fan outcry, because it didn't sell well. But they literally got flooded with mail, you know, at the offices and brought it back for a while because it was so popular. Like
I remember that. I just never have read any of them. And I do have some of the Spectre, but you know what? It could have been just my age at the time that I couldn't really appreciate it. Maybe. I was
deals
like 15.
With dark issues. I mean, the Spectre is. Deal like the first arc deals with the AIDS virus. Like the main detective that's not Corrigan.
Oh, you know what? Never mind. I'm thinking of the Doug Munch.
The Doug Munch one, yeah.
I have the
Ostrander Ghost
in
the Machine.
Series.
Yeah,
I have the entire Ostrander series.
It's amazing. Yeah. That has Tom Mandrake pencils. Oh my God.
That's fantastic.
Matter of fact, they're supposed to be releasing at cons. Tom Mandrake's going to cons. And back in that time frame, it was right around the death of Superman. I remember distinctively they had the Spectre gimmick with the glow in the dark cover that's phenomenal. And at cons, he's coming out with a poster. Like, he did a full-size poster, and I think it's glow in the dark. And I was like, hell yeah, I'd probably want that. I'd probably take it to work. They'd probably make me take it down, but I'd put it up anyway until they told me to take it down.
That's cool. Yeah, the Doug Munch was like 5 or 6 years before that, and I
Yeah,
was just
it was the one
think I
before
was
it.
too young to like appreciate it. And by the time Ostrander came, that was like 92, so I was more like 20, and it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is an amazing story.
Well, it's like I love when they like tap into the religious aspects of it, like, because he is the spirit of vengeance for God. I mean, he's it gets really creepy. And it goes back to like the Fleshner, like runs Michael Fleshner, like in Adventure Comics. Like those are gold.
And
That's what
those,
that's
yeah,
when
those are really dark for
Matt, those
like
are
the 70s. It's like, oh
extremely
my
dark,
God.
and it is so fun to read the letters columns because it's like people writing in saying this is awful. This is like gut-wrenching, like what you chop that guy's head off with scissors. I mean, but the thing is he would use like irony to kill him. So like if somebody was a barbershop killer, he would use shears to like chop his head off, or
Exactly.
yeah, he would use something that they were doing unjust to kill them. And I don't know, it was amazing.
It was very shocking to read something of that era that was, well after the Comics Code was established, but still was like creepy and dark and really kind of scary. So
Yeah.
yeah, I really appreciated it.
I just picked up a old showcase with the Spectre that I was missing. It wasn't his first showcase appearance because I already had that, but it was a later one that I picked it up from Aaron Myers because he had it on his page.
Very cool.
Too many people know about that page now. It pisses me off.
Well, it's your fault.
Son of a bitch.
Where he is that how he sells stuff?
Yeah, on Facebook. And that's like the first place I visit in the morning, and it's the first place I visit at night. And he posts it, but then he takes off the post as soon as somebody claims it. And I swear he had like some Fantastic Fours, and they were the ones I needed. So I was like, claim, claim, claim. And I was getting ready to hit the other one, and some fucker came and took it right from me. I'm like, son of a bitch, the post
It
just
wasn't me.
vanished. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, I'll go on Facebook sometimes, and on top of my feed is one after the other of his because somebody put a little notation that I know after every one. Claim, 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 Mr. Myers. And so, yeah, they keep popping up. So it's your own fault.
Well, right now he has something on there that's very interesting, but I could get it from my comic shop for cheaper. And it's like a fanzine that I didn't know about that it has an amazing cover. Let me see what it is. Dark Muse. It was a fanzine that only had like 4 issues, but it like concentrated on interviews with like Tim V. Hill, and I don't know if you knew the hype around Tim V. Hill, but
No.
around the 90s he wrote a kind of like a superhero demon story called Faust, and it was or he drew it. David Quinn was the writer of it, and I at that time it was black and white, very sexual, very, I mean, it's borderline X triple X, but it focuses on like those creators like David Quinn and Tim V. Hill, and I love fanzines because you like get fans writing articles and stuff, and it's just like you get gems like of what was happening during that time period. That goes back to my fanzines. Like I'm buying all kinds of fanzines lately. A matter of fact, they talked about it on 11 O'Clock Comics. They got an old fanzine I haven't even heard of, but it had like the top 10 creators of contributors, comic contributors of 1973. And man, if I could guess three of them, it was amazing. I mean, it was like there was only like four or five creators I knew, and the rest were like publishers or distributors I hadn't even heard of. But it's
That's
absolutely
funny.
fascinating.
Yeah, I like that.
Why do we kick this off with Chris talking about something?
Yeah, we've been blabbing our gums long enough.
Yeah.
All righty. So I did a trial of the DC Universe app,
Oh, yeah.
how did
And
you like it?
Well, I canceled it already.
Oh, you liked it that much?
Actually, I had an. I mean, I was only. I'm only interested in the comics right now because I'm not really watching TV in general. Like, Doom Patrol looks interesting, and I might want to watch that at some point. But I know I'm just not in watching TV right now. It's just I just go through phases, and I can't really change that too much.
What do you do to chill now? Like, you had a rough day at work. What do you do to wind down that entertains you?
I'm probably more into video games right now than anything else.
Okay. Are
But
retro
yeah.
games, or are you currently playing like the you had that handheld game I remember at that one convention?
They tend to like I tend not to be playing stuff that just came out because they get cheaper so fast.
Yeah.
They drop in price so quickly, so yeah, I mean, I tend to play stuff that's older, at least a little bit older, but it varies. But yeah, I just kind of go through phases. I guess it keeps things fresh for me. But no, though, I mean, I am impressed with the way that they've upped the amount of comics that are on the app and stuff. And but for some reason, I'm having an issue on my Android tablet, where I haven't encountered this with Marvel Unlimited or Hoopla or anything else that I've used to read comics, but the load speed is just kind of slow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it takes a little while for the comic to come up, and then as I'm going through like the I might have to wait for pages to load, and
Or you
sometimes
have you have you ever got Alfred to show
I've had Alfred show up, yeah, multiple times.
What does that mean?
Alfred means that the slow it's too slow, so it's having trouble loading.
It's Alfred from Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, that's funny.
You get an image of him, and you can try to reload, and I reloaded like six times to finally get a page to show up. So, I mean, this was only last night. So, I mean, I rebooted my tablet and tried out other apps, and I wasn't having the same issue. So, you know, I have a week before it before my subscription stops. So, I'll try it out, see if it's better. But it's something that is probably an isolated issue and probably not something that. You know, it's going to be like I wouldn't expect it to be an ongoing problem.
Yeah, I didn't do a trial, but they offered that you could watch the first episodes for free.
Yeah.
So I watched both of the first episodes on TV on the Fire TV, and it was I thought it was pretty easy experience just for watching those. I didn't see any hiccups at that time, but that was a few weeks ago. So
Yeah.
I'm thinking you're right. It probably was just an isolated
You
issue.
should try it, Rob, because they're adding a lot of comic content. I
Yeah,
mean,
I know. It sounds like they kind of realized
I'm
they can't.
rereading Final Crisis right now, and I am blown away at how much, like, I guess when I read it at the time, I don't know if it was like getting it and then reading it and then waiting a month and then getting it and reading it. And then some was delayed because J.G. Jones would have the art late. But I'm reading it now in sequential, and God, the experience is just, it is blowing me away because it's like, it's a love letter to the stuff that me and Chris read. Like the fourth world, it is extremely well done. Like, I am seeing so many links to things that me and Chris covered that it is just mind blowing.
Well, let me ask you, and I'm sorry we keep delaying you, Chris,
Yeah,
from
poor
doing your
Chris.
but I just
That's
want to
okay.
ask,
You guys are
so
chatterboxes.
is it, it have they kind of changed? It sounds from the outside looking in that they've kind of changed or are about to change their paradigm when it comes to the comic books, where before it was a limited selection that would rotate out every month or a couple months or whatever. It sounds like now they're adding like a huge amount of material, and is that material staying, or is it,
Yeah,
are they still?
it's staying, and then the like if a comic comes out this Wednesday, the paradigm is that you'll see that comic on the app a year from now.
Okay, so they're
So
going more like a Marvel
Marvel
Unlimited
Unlimited,
has
yeah.
been. Okay, that's what I kind of was getting out of it. I just wanted to make sure that that was correct, because I think it was a mistake to, they offer so little and rotate it in or out. I don't think they realize that a lot of people, appreciate a huge, like a library, basically a library, you
Yeah,
know.
and the thing that that I do, and I do this with the Marvel Unlimited app, is like I figure it is so damn cheap that if I read like six comics, I'm getting my money's worth. So I always make it a point to always read six digital comics on the Marvel app, if not more. Usually it's more like 12 a month. And then on the DC app, I at least watch like four shows, and to me the shows alone are worth my cost of admission, but I've been reading a lot of comics on there now too, so
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, I'm gonna have to check. I'm done. I mean, I'm going to end up getting it. It's just a matter of when. I want to wait until I know I'm gonna have a chance to really get into it
yeah.
and get my money's
It
worth.
worked out well for me for the DC Spotlight because Kyle picked a book, which I have, and he picked something. It was a Green Arrow Longbow Hunter, so I was like, okay, I'll go look for it. But then I was like, I wonder if it's on this app, and it was, and I was like, hell, that's convenient.
You don't have to look for
Yeah, I
anything.
don't have to go look for it.
That's cool. And I'll definitely be getting the Disney one when that comes as well. Sounds like there's going to be
I
a lot of
won't
shows on that.
unless it's Marvel driven.
There's going to be a handful, but I'm a big Star Wars guy too, so I want to watch that Star Wars show.
Yeah, so am I. I'm excited. I always get excited for Star Wars. I don't know how people could get upset so much. I just don't get it.
I
I'm
don't
kind of
either.
in between.
I don't get upset and I don't really get excited.
But you know what? It makes sense to me because I think a lot to do with has to do with age. It's like, like I experienced them
I
all in the
really think
theaters when they came out.
I agree with you. I think it hit us at such a time that shit, there's nothing they there's shit can never stink. Do you know what I
No.
mean? No,
No, you're absolutely.
I
You're
am actually
100%
being
right.
I'm being honest.
Yep, you're
It
100% right.
hit us at an age where we were floored. Like we had nothing like that before. So we have like this thing in our brain that just sees it and it just like triggers off this like endorphin and we're like, fuck, this, I'm excited. Like it's just like, I don't know, it's weird. So yes, I have that mentality that the shit can never stink. And for me, I think it's because of the age that I saw it in 1977.
Yep, I
And
agree.
I wasn't even in double digits yet
I
in
was five.
age. Yeah.
We
So
went and saw it in the theater.
Yep.
My parents took me out of school, out of kindergarten.
And I had
We
never
went and
seen
saw it.
anything like it. 1977, this huge theater called the Hilton only had one entrance, and it only showed one movie. Like, it was a big screen, I'll give you that, but it didn't have like a six Cineplex or something like that. It was just one theater. And the line, it went like to Walgreens, like it just wrapped around the building and all the way to Walgreens. And I was like, "Dad, what is going on? Like, I've never seen anything like this." And I don't know, just like every second of that movie, just it I don't know it. And then my dad had a reel-to-reel projector, and one of the first things he bought, that's where we filmed home movies. And there's some gems in those home movies. Oh my God. But they used to sell like reel-to-reel films, but like ViewMasters, but film. And there was a Star Wars one, and it only has like two scenes in black and white, and no sound. There was no sound on these old reel-to-reel projectors. It was all video, and it only had two scenes. It had the scene where Obi-Wan was giving the lightsaber to Luke, and telling him about his father. And then it had the scene where they were shooting at the TIE fighters, Solo and Luke, in the Millennium Falcon. And I swear, I watched that tape so much that I was like a regular projectionist. Like, I knew how to set up that film. I
You could
knew
have
how to
gotten stuck.
splice the film if it burned. If it, I was like ready to load that sucker. And I must have seen that like 100 million times, because my dad showed me early on how to set it up, and me and my brother would just watch the same footage over and over again. I must have saw it like 150 times.
That's fantastic.
But Chris can't even get a word out today, so.
I don't try very hard. I'm sorry.
He's like, eventually
It's
somebody's
like,
gonna run
what
out
is
of
wrong with these guys, man? Did they eat sugar for breakfast or what?
Well, I don't wonder that about you, Mike. I know you eat sugar for
Oh,
breakfast.
I
Yeah,
do.
donuts.
The powdered donut cereal. You bet I do.
It's bad
Although I
for
had
you.
the banana cornflakes the other day.
Sounds good.
All right, so let's let Chris say it, like a few sentences at least, and then we'll interrupt again.
Chris, do your best, Chris.
So I read The Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love, number one.
Oh, nice. I did
No
the same
way.
thing.
That's awesome.
The Secret of the Missing Bride. What was the meaning of Bettina's last phone call? In a house of sinister secrets, Laura Chandler seeks the shocking truth. It's got
That
a
was
really cool
the,
cover.
I mean, just, I'm going to interrupt you again.
I
That
knew
is
you
the,
would as soon as I said what I read.
that was the first comic I read on the app.
Was it really?
Oh, was
Yes,
it?
it was the very first comic I read.
So we both read the same first comic on the app.
On the app, yeah.
Because I saw that they had this on here, and I don't come across these very often.
Well, somebody, I mean, I've been saying I've been trying to buy these things, and they're so expensive.
Yeah, so they're hard to come by, so it's cool that they're on here.
The cover
So
is
yeah,
worth
this is.
admission alone. I just adore those covers.
Yeah. I think isn't there a t-shirt of this first issue cover? I
If
think I've
there
seen
is,
right.
you need to point me in the direction, because
I
I will
think there
buy it
is.
right now. The thing I love about these covers, and God, I can't let you talk, but they have like a romance novel theme, but it's very gothic. Like the covers are real gothic,
Yeah.
because it's like gothic romance. It's horror in the romance vibe, and it looks like a romance novel, but really dark.
Right. Yeah, it has that. Gothic is a good word for it. So this is a full length issue, a full length story. And it starts out with a funeral of a girl named Bettina, and it's just a small. Well, it's a burial, actually. It's a small gathering. It's mostly just her family, and then there's a young woman there who is our protagonist, Laura Chandler, who was the best friend of the deceased. And she meets Bettina's family after the funeral. Her Aunt Emily and her husband. She ends up feeling dizzy as she's talking to them and faints. And she comes to in the back seat of the car between Aunt Emily and Bettina's husband, Michael. So she's a little confused at first about where they're taking her, and they're saying they're taking her somewhere safe so she can recover. So, and you know, they take her back to their house. But it's a pretty gothic, old school looking mansion. And she freaks out as they're pulling up and tries to take off and runs off into the woods, and falls. But then Michael pursues her, and they end up kissing. She decides to let him take her into the mansion. So you end up getting the sense that something's a little odd here with Aunt Emily, and she's also talking to the family doctor, and she offers and insists that Laura drink this cup of milk to, you know, it's like, here, drink some milk, it'll help you feel better kind of thing. And she ends up passing out again and feeling dizzy, of course, and because it was drugged. So she wakes up a little bit later, and this time she's in a bedroom. Aunt Emily comes in. She's older, has white hair. She asks that Laura stay on with them, and that she needs a secretary, and that she could give her a good salary. Emily was acting kind of cold earlier, but now she's acting sort of friendly and saying that Bettina, the girl that died, used to write them letters about her and their friendship and stuff. Laura's suspicious, but she decides to stay on to try to figure out what happened to Bettina, because before Bettina died, she called Laura, and she was upset, and she said that the family, Aunt Emily and the other Langfries is their last name, were covering up a crime, and so that was the last time she had heard from Bettina. So she decides she's going to stay there and figure out what happened. And over time, as she's staying there, she continues to get closer to Michael. They kiss several times, and she has second thoughts about it, you know, because he had just been married to her best friend, and she says, you know, he claiming that he loved his wife, but she's gone now, etc. And they have a weird butler, and strange accidents happen as things progress. And then eventually Michael recounts the story to her of how his parents died and why he's living with his aunt, that it was a Christmas Eve and his parents were decorating the tree. And Emily got a phone call, and his parents said that they were going to have to go into town, take care of some important business. And Emily insisted they have some eggnog with them before they leave. And his parents left, and they had a Christmas Eve dinner. It was just Michael and his aunt and uncle. And while his parents were gone, they drove off of a cliff into, and died, into a ravine or whatnot. And so that's how his parents died, and it's kind of suspicious. And his uncle is still living there as well, even though we haven't seen them. But he pretty much just lives on the third floor of the mansion and doesn't ever come out. And he tells Laura not to go up there, that it's dangerous. But she learns that Bettina was acting as kind of a nurse for Michael's uncle. So she decides to go up there anyway, and meets his uncle. But he mistakes her for someone. He calls her Francesca, and she's sort of confused, but she hears someone crying, and she finds this young blonde girl living up there as well, that acts kind of strange, and she acts young for her apparent age. It turns out that she's Emily's daughter, when Emily married her husband, Michael's uncle, she brought Francesca there with her, and she just kind of lives locked up upstairs with Emily's husband, her stepdad. So if that's not complicated enough, there's a man who breaks into the mansion at night and is sneaking around. And Laura is, she finds Bettina's diary. As she's doing that, there's a man, this man that broke into the house is sneaking up behind her. Just as he's about to maybe do something to her, someone, a woman probably screams somewhere in the house, and the guy that's creeping up behind her runs away. So it turns out that Francesca, Emily's daughter, has snuck out of the house and has wandered off into the woods. So they go to try to find her. They eventually catch up to her near the cliff where Michael's parents died. And she starts wandering off into the ocean, Michael ends up catching up with her and bringing her back. But there's still this mysterious person creeping around the mansion. Laura's upset because she thinks, oh, you know, I'm the one that got Francesca upset and caused her to run away. So Laura's finally gets a chance to look at Bettina's diary, and in it she finds an entry that says that Emily is the one that caused the death of Michael's parents, that she arranged things that they would drive off the cliff. Um, And just as she's reading this, Michael's uncle appears in the room in his wheelchair, and she says, "You can't do anything, you know. You can't catch up with me." And he reveals that he's only crippled when it suits him, and he stands up and starts walking towards her. And just as this happens, the guy that's been sneaking around the mansion jumps in and pushes him out of the way, and he ends up falling down the stairs. And it turns out to be John Langfrey, who was Michael's uncle's brother. And he's disfigured, and he says that he's been trying to get revenge for 10 years. He's been locked away in a madhouse. Alice and her husband stole his inheritance. So he disappears, and they don't believe Laura that John Langfrey showed up. He goes off, John Langfrey does, and he starts a bunch of fires to light the house up. And then reappears, comes out and reveals that to Emily and them that he actually really is there. And so the house is on fire, so everybody rushes out except for John Langfrey, who just stays within while it's burning out. Now that like the secrets are out in the open with what Emily did, Michael didn't know or anything about it, so he proposes to Laura and she accepts. So I don't know if that was, if you could follow all that, but suffice to say, I mean, there's a lot that goes on over like 30, it's 37 pages. And I mean, I didn't want to get too bogged down in the details about what went on, but suffice to say, it's kind of, you know, it was entertaining. It had a lot of twists and turns, and it definitely had that. It definitely evokes the vibe that you expect from the cover. Mike, what did you think of it?
I'm biased, but one thing I love horror, and I love romance comics, and that fit the bill. So.
Yeah,
it satisfies a little bit of both.
It was a fun read.
Yeah.
You know, if it sounded interesting, you know, I would say that when you're reading it, you know, it's not that hard to follow all the goings on, but it's a little tough to explain. But maybe that gives you a chance to still be able to get something out of the story.
Yeah, if anybody's interested,
I definitely want to check it out.
It's Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love, and then it turns into Forbidden Tales of Dark Mansion, and then I think it eventually turns into Dark Mansion. So, yeah, it's a good series. Plus, if
yeah,
you're
I like
into, I don't know, if you really like Titan Comics hard case crime covers, these have that the style that those have, but it's a different genre. So it's very like pulpy cover, like and it's very gothic, but it's like something that you would see on a paperback novel. Like I just love them. As the series progresses, it loses that feel. It becomes more like a standard comic cover. But the initial ones are just amazing. A matter of fact, I've been trying to track down these. Plus, one of the issues I've been seeking out from that dead company, Atlas Comics, is another gothic romance magazine, and it's expensive. Me and you talked about it, Rob.
Yep.
Well, who wants to go next?
I can go.
Okay.
All right. So, as I think it was me and you, Mike, last time I mentioned that I was going to get into the Doom Patrol by Grant Morrison omnibus, right?
Yes. We talked about it, and I said how some of it was going to make you lose interest.
Yeah, so now I'm going to cover issue number 51. So I'm getting there. I think it only goes up to 63 in this omnibus.
So you're getting close.
I'm getting close.
Wow.
I'm not going to stop reading.
Well, let me just say I'm extremely impressed. And the reason I'm impressed is not only because of the material, but I'm also impressed because that is the biggest honking book that I own in my library. It's huge. I don't own anything that big, and I own some big omnibuses. This thing is the biggest thing. I don't even know how it holds itself together. I'm just amazed.
You're right. I mean,
physics says it's
taken me a long time to go through, but I, you know, like in the evenings, like if before we're going to sit down and watch TV or whatever, I'll prop it up on a, put a pillow on my lap, prop this up on the pillow and read an issue or two, you know?
Has your wife ever commented on the size of that thing?
Oh, yes.
That's what she said.
Yes. She said, oh my goodness. That is huge.
Yes, it's funny because when I said that, Barb was looking at me really funny.
But you know what? You were right.
Is that an omnibus in your pocket?
Right, exactly. You just
is that a Doom Patrol omnibus in your pocket? Or are you just happy to see me?
Or are you just a robot man?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I gotta tell you, like, you're right. Like the start of it, I thought was pretty interesting. There was one issue in particular, and I can't remember what the issue number was. And I'm looking through, but I don't see it offhand. But there was an absolutely amazing, amazing one shot issue featuring the Brain in Manzur Mala, which it was just like almost like a self contained story just with the two of them, and that was kind of like the first time that they hinted that they were actually in love, you know, and that was fantastic. But and then as it kept going, it's like, oh, this is really kind of like some of these arcs are just losing me. But you know, I stuck with it and I went through, and some I've liked more than others. But it is, I mean, it's very, I don't know. I don't even know what the word is. It's obscure. I don't know. It's just weird. It's very weird. But this issue 51 actually was pretty entertaining. What you've got is a villain from earlier in the run, Mr. Nobody, comes back and he forms a new brotherhood. And I don't know why. But it's called the Brotherhood of Dada. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. At first,
song from the 80s, da da da.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe
that's what inspired the Brotherhood of Dada.
Dada, yeah. But
well,
it
actually was an art movement, and that's probably, knowing Grant Morrison, that's probably what it refers to.
Yeah, I bet it does. He's like listening to that, and he's like, Dada.
It was like Dadaism. It was like the early 1900s. And it was like they rejected like logic and reason.
Okay, well that makes perfect sense, because so were these villains.
Yeah, so they would use like collage and like take objects that exist in reality, and like one famous Marcel Duchamp, like he took like a toilet and just signed it. so they would like make statements like that, or like that, like that would be in visual art. And then like there was like Dada poetry, which used a lot of like sounds instead of actual words and stuff like that. So
interesting.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean,
it makes sense that it would be in Morrison's wheelhouse too.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. You know, what's funny is the first page of this is, and I'm only reading, looking at this panel by panel, and it's got this heavy text of a man, like a news reporter, in a TV, just giving a report, and I'm like, oh god, this is going to be a long issue to get through, and I wasn't really paying attention to the bottom part of the page, and I get to the bottom part, and it turns out it's just this crazy man just in the middle of the street with like a fake TV set on his head giving a news report. He's wearing the top of a suit, but he's just wearing like polka dot boxers, you know, for in no pants, and like these two police officers are, okay, come on buddy, come along. So he's just like walking the street giving a fake news report with a fake TV set on his head. So that was actually kind of an amusing start to it. But this Mr. Nobody is running for president. Okay. And he's actually getting a following because they've escaped from, to your point, Chris, with the art movement, they had escaped earlier from a painting that they had been trapped in. And so then it kind of changes scenes to Robot Man and Crazy Jane are hanging out on their headquarters has moved at this point to Danny the Street. So they're talking and stuff, and Cliff is saying, you know, how concerned he is that Mr. Nobody is back and that people are actually listening to what he has to, this nonsense that he has to say, and that he wants to you know, that they're going to have to stop him. And Crazy Jane is saying, I really don't think, you know, some of his statements and ideas are all that bad, and so on and so forth. And so pretty much what you've got is Mr. Nobody and crew end up taking over a television station, and he starts giving a speech to try to get more people interested in his nonsense. And so the Doom Patrol are watching this, and Robot Man is again saying, you know, what are we going to do about this? And Crazy Jane says, I'm not fighting him. He's like, I actually think that he's good. He's got a lot of good ideas. I'm not fighting him. And Robot Man is like, what are you talking about? And then at that point, Negative Man has gone through a transformation, and he says that he's not going to be able to help either. He's got to leave. They don't explain exactly what that means. This one other guy, I don't even quite know what his powers are. He doesn't wear a costume at all. His name's just Joshua. He hangs out with the chief a lot, and he doesn't take the... He's usually not front and center in any of these issues, but he said he'll come with Robot Man. And in the meantime, we've got a third thing going on where the government at the Pentagon, which there had been a previous arc just prior to this where there was weird stuff. I can't even explain what was going on with the Pentagon and everything else, but some, like there was an invasion and they had to do stuff at the Pentagon to stop this, and the actual Pentagon. And anyhow, some generals are very concerned also about Mr. Nobody and the Brotherhood of Dada. So they're going to reactivate one of their agents, which was John Dandy. And he can transform into Yankee Doodle. And so they're going to deploy Yankee Doodle against Mr. Nobody. And that's basically where this issue ends up at the end, is that you know that in the following issues, Yankee Doodle is going to be let loose. Apparently he had been he's inside the Pentagon in some sort of classified area, and they're going to go ahead and let him loose to go against Mr. Nobody, and then at the same time, it looks like Robot Man and Joshua are also going to come after him. So I expect to see more in issue 52. This was a lot of like kind of setup, but I have to say this was actually one of the more, believe it or not, one of the more straightforward issues in probably the past 20. I can't say that I don't like this series as a whole. But it has its ups and downs for me. I have a feeling when I'm done with it, it's not going to be something that I ever need to revisit again. I don't know. It's overall, I don't think that this generally is up right up my alley, where I know that some others like, you know, like Martin, and I think Daryl's a big Grant Morrison fan, isn't he?
I don't think he's a Doom Patrol fan.
No, he's
I
not.
think
I
he,
wasn't
he's
sure.
I think he's a Grant Morrison fan, but he's more in the JLA
Okay.
Batman.
No, I can see that. But it's so
He
it's, you
might
know, it's okay
be. I've
for
just
what it
never
is.
heard
I think
Daryl talk
it's
about Doom
overly
Patrol.
obscure sometimes.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know if you saw the description on our database, but at the last sentence says, "Much more than a superhero series, Doom Patrol combines Dadaism, psychedelia, and adult themes into a compelling mix that makes unique among comics." So there's your Dadaisms.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and I'll agree. It's unique. That doesn't
It
necessarily
is
mean that it's
different.
great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think some people, I don't know. I've never done drugs, so I don't know. Like if I have, maybe I would enjoy it more.
I haven't either, but I can imagine that if I had taken some prior to reading these issues, I probably would enjoy them more.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. I don't dislike it. It's just some of them are a little too impenetrable for me.
I
It's just too
remember
much
reading
sometimes.
this, and some of it, like, this came out, what was it, in the early 90s? Was it? The
Yeah.
Morrison
Yeah.
start?
Yes. Yeah. From late, it started in like 89 and went through like
Yeah, when I
93,
started reading
94.
it, I was really attached at the very beginning. Like, you give me the first 10 issues, and I was feeling it. And then you hit some of the middle part, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I just didn't understand it. But then there was like glimpses of hope, like
Yeah.
every now and then, that I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Well,
That's
that's pretty
exactly
cool.
where I'm going with
And that's
this. That's
kind of how I experienced
exactly what
it.
I'm trying to say.
Now,
Yes.
I might feel different now than I did back then, but around that time, I was very impressionable. Like, to ideas open, like, I don't know, it's just that time period. So
No, I that's kind of how I feel, but I can't imagine having read this on a month-to-month basis. Like, I'm reading these
yeah, but Chris described it
quickly.
pretty well. Like, when you gave us the definition of Dada, is, you know, it kind of said absence of logic. And I'm a very logical person, like, except when it comes to comics. Like, everything else I'm pretty logical with. So I can see why it doesn't, I don't latch on to a lot of the ideas, because I think logically.
I found the issue that the prior issue.
I think more science and math, like factual things, than I do artistic things. That's just the way my mind works.
Yeah. I don't think that I'm necessarily as much like that.
But
I'm not a big
I've
math
never
person,
gotten
but
into poetry. Like, and Chris mentioned poetry. I mean, he
yeah, that's
mentioned
true.
art. When I look at art, I don't like get into the abstract stuff at all. Like, we were just in Chicago, and there's like, you go into this one park, and there's like all these like feet. I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, made out of iron, like, and I was like, there must be like I don't know, maybe 50 legs in the middle of the park, and they don't have an upper body. They're just legs and feet. And I'm like, what is this? Like, but some people might look at that and say that this is amazing.
Yeah.
But I tend to like the art that's more real, like where I can see the line and it forming something that I can see rather than something abstract. Like, I don't understand the abstractness, because some people can look at abstract art and see something, and then I'll look at the same piece and not see something, but I'll see something different. And that's what abstraction is to me. It's like whatever you see in the image. That's what this series is.
Yeah. <It's>
like... But yeah, and I think some of Morrison's stuff, it's written to be analyzed, and if you want to take the time and really try to digest it and analyze and try to interpret different things and, you know, dig in that way, you can, you know, but it doesn't always make for a good casual read, you know?
Yeah.
He sort of has a spectrum. Like, there's some stuff that I don't even know if it's possible to analyze it. It's just so off the wall. And then there's stuff that's like in between that, you know, if you read it slowly and maybe look up a interpretation on the internet by somebody smarter, you can figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then there's the really accessible stuff that he's done where he really like tempers a lot of that stuff and like still has really interesting and creative ideas, but it's easier to follow, like JLA and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you just like, it's like I've heard people say, what Morrison is this, or what Morrison are you getting with this, you know?
Because right.
You'd never, like, it's not where some writers, you know, are pretty consistent like in their style.
Like, I don't have to necessarily always, like, have it super straightforward. I don't know where you would put, or if you've read Animal Man.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved Animal Man. I thought it was great. But this is very up and down for me. Some things I enjoy, some things that I don't.
Animal Man, though, doesn't have it as continuous. Like, when it gets into the weird stuff, it's like, okay, here's the Roadrunner issue, and then it comes down. This one never comes down. Like it's always at that tone. Like, so I think that's why me and you navigate more towards Animal Man than we would Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
I'm loving his Final Crisis like right now. Like I'm adoring it. Like every page, I just.
Yeah, Animal Man's good. I think it's kind of in between, you know. It's not like as straightforward as his most straightforward stuff, but it's still pretty easy to follow.
But it's grounded in his family, too. Like, there's a lot of love. I mean, when you think about Buddy, you think of Ellen and his kids, Cliff. And I mean,
maybe it's either easier to relate to, maybe,
yeah,
even if
I
it's
know.
Weird
it's just,
stuff going on.
It's got
on,
weird
yeah.
stuff, but it's got stuff that it can get weird, but it still has something that somebody can relate to.
Right, yeah.
But I still think that Robot Man's the heart and soul of Doom Patrol. Like, without him, you just don't have anything to work with.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt at all. You're
yeah,
absolutely
he's just... He's what... if any character is Doom Patrol, he is Doom Patrol.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally
so,
agree.
So, for my pick, I think I'm just going to talk about some recent purchases.
Okay.
And go from there. But I bought a lot of Uncanny X-Men, and it mostly focused around 144 and went to 197. So I have
nice. That was that's my sweet spot, Mike.
Almost have a complete run now of all the way up to like 200. And then it even goes past that because I'm only missing like single issues here and there between the rest of it. But now it's pretty much continuous from 144 to like 197, minus like three issues, which I'll have to get. But there's a lot of keys in there too, so it looks like a really, really good run. And it was a bulk purchase, and I'm glad I got it. And like I said before, the X-Men really never appealed to me until recently. So it's probably within the last 20 years that I started caring about the X-Men, and I never bothered to go back. So now I'm going back. Some of the other purchases I got is these ones are hard to track down, and especially in good shape, and this one's a really good shape. But I got the Many Loves of Dobie Gillis, number 21. This one I absolutely adore because I used to watch Dobie Gillis. Like, that was my show. I used to love to watch this thing. And it taught me all my moves. That's how I got my wife. I learned about Dobie Gillis. So I was very happy to add that. I only have like four Dobie Gillises, but man, they are hard to find. I can sometimes buy some beat up copies, but I don't want them because they're so beat up. They don't meet my criteria. I also picked up, I didn't even know this existed, but from Dell, the Little Stooges. This one's a Whitman variant, actually. And I've been into the Three Stooges a lot lately. And I've been trying to track down the Three Stooges from a publisher called St. John's in the 40s. And I haven't had much luck. But I have talked to vendors that know about them. And they said they can't keep them in stock because they're so, I don't know, people look for Laurel and Hardy stuff, and they usually sell pretty fast. But I'm glad that American Mythology is publishing a lot of their old books. So that's how I found out about them to begin with, is through American Mythology reprints. I did find at the comic shop this last time a St. John's publication, and I think it's my first St. John's publication, and it was Laurel and Hardy from the 40s. And this issue is a reprint, but it's a reprint within its original series. And if you look at our database, there's not too many issues for it. There's like 1 through 3, and then 26 through 28 are reprints that came out in 1955. Well, I have 28.
Wow.
But I was glad to get a copy of this, and it's pretty amazing looking through this. It just, I'm very happy that I got it. And then I ran across a Golden Age. I think the Golden Age artists are like a step above Silver Age for me personally. Like I just am blown away by their artistic art style. And I ran into a book called Little Miss Muffet, and this is normally not in my wheelhouse, but it looked pretty awesome. And it's number 12, and it's from King Features Comics. So I'm glad that when I made my Mylar purchases, I bought like 200 Golden Age Mylars and 200 magazine Mylars. I'm gonna have to get more, but because as my Golden Age collection is growing, but I was happy to add this to my collection. As I see them, I've been getting them, but the covers to Sea Devils is some of the best covers that DC Comics ever published, in my opinion. And I have been trying to finish my Sea Devils collection as I find them. Well, I found number 15, and it's probably in VG Fine, really good copy. But the next one I want to talk about is a gem. I didn't even know it was a gem. This is Sea Devils number 12, number 6. And I didn't even notice this when I bought it, but I came home and I was going to open it and put it in another bag. Even though it was Mylar, it's the thinner Mylar, and you can hear what a thinner Mylar sounds like. But I flipped it over and I was like, Barb, holy shit, what is this? Well, this thing came from the IRS collection, and this is what I'm going to talk about. The IRS is one of the largest private collections ever sold. An employee of the Colorado Department of Revenue, CDR, allegedly infiltrated the Colorado income tax refund computer in 1989 and started writing fraudulent income tax refund checks. The employee used
Oh,
these
jeez.
funds to further his comic collecting habit. He had been a collector for over 20 years and thought he had finally found the perfect solution to achieve a simple goal. He wanted a copy of every comic ever published. Does that sound familiar?
Mike, did you used to
Over
work for the IRS?
20 years and hundreds of thousands of dollars were spent building this massive collection. Approximately 25% of all Golden Age, 75% of all Silver Age, and 95% of all Modern Age comics are represented in this collection, as well as
Wow.
numerous prints, portfolios, graphic novels, pulps, rare fanzines, Mile High copies, and Sunday pages. There are some 60,000 plus different comics in this collection. The collector bought the comics from many sources, but stored them all in a legendary dry and mild climate of Colorado.
Hey, that's where you live. Wait a minute. Things are starting to kind of link up here.
furthermore, the rarest and most valuable comics were allegedly stored in seven climate-controlled refrigerators dedicated to the preservation of these important treasures. However, the state of Colorado caught up with this alleged embezzler in March of 1992. The CDR seized the collection as restitution for the crime. After a full recovery of the collection was auctioned by sealed bid, RTS Unlimited Incorporated is pleased to have been declared the winner. Many of the comics from this collection will never be available to the public again, so take care and enjoy this unique comic as it's an unusual place in the comics collecting history. This certificate is for Sea Devils number 6 in GD Plus, and it has a certificate number and a awesome stamp that says the IRS collection.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Very cool. Something I had no idea happened. Absolutely fascinating to me. And I am happy to say I have one of the comics from the IRS collection in my collection.
That's super cool. I like that.
Yeah, it's cool. So that's what I wanted to talk about.
Like it. What else you got?
So the other thing that I read on DC Universe was Green Arrow number one. Of course, I need to specify which Green Arrow number one. This is from, I think, around 83 or so. It's actually a 4-issue miniseries. Which
Okay, yep.
I didn't really know that this existed, but it's it was written by Mike W. Barr with art by Trevor Von Eden and Dick Giordano. So it's kind of funny. It says the battling bowman in his own magazine at last. It's like, didn't Green Arrow have a comic book before this? Like,
No, he was a backup feature.
even in the Golden Age?
In the Golden Age,
I think it was like in More Fun or something
I think
like
More
that.
Fun Comics, yeah. So
Yeah, so
he
I think that's his first one, yeah.
appeared a lot in World's Finest and I think Action or one of those comics as a
Yeah, he was
backup.
in Detective in the 80s,
Yeah,
too.
Detective too.
Yeah, because I know, obviously he shared a book with Green Arrow. But I guess I was assuming that there was a Green Arrow comic in the Golden Age.
You know what I was shocked to hear is that Green Arrow and Green Lantern, which is one of the biggest talked about things, Denny O'Neil and Neal Adams, was a huge flop. Like I had no idea it sold like crap.
Really?
Yeah.
I had
It's
no
these
idea
fan
either.
it's these fanzines that give that stuff out. And I'm like, wow, they can't they gave In this fanzine from 1973, they gave props to DC for canceling it because it's low sales. So I was like, wow. And like, that's something I would have never guessed in my wildest dreams.
Interesting.
Because it's critically acclaimed now. Sorry, Chris. I have to butt in every 2 seconds.
That's okay. Yeah, so I guess this is his first magazine. So yeah, it starts out with him on patrol, taking out just a couple common thugs, but sort of humorous. I mean, I've seen this kind of thing plenty of times. I don't know if it was played out by this point, but it has the kind of segment where you have the guy who's he's like, "You want to take me on?" And he's like, "I've studied the best, Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris," and he's doing all these like different moves. And Green Arrow's just kind of standing there, like, sure," and then just takes him out in one shot. You get the kind of sense of the sort of neighborhood that he's in. The guy who he's helping out, that that they were these guys were attacking, beating up this guy because I guess he kicked them out of his restaurant or something like that. And he's thanking Green Arrow for the help, and he said, "I hope the police would have come, but." And Green Arrow says, "The cops only patrol this area in groups of five or more, fella." And he's like, "But I know a way to get their attention." And he shoots an arrow and shorts out a billboard, like an electronic billboard or something like that. It's kind of hard to tell from the panel, or if he's crashing, breaking something. And so basically does that so the cops will show up, and they do as he takes off. So he goes back to his apartment, and he's living without any sort of fortune or anything like that at this point. And just as he's getting ready to settle in, he changes into a puts on a robe. There's a knock at the door, and there's a woman there. It says, "How did you get in without me seeing you? I've been waiting for hours. What are you doing with this here at, what are you doing in a neighborhood like this at this time of night?" And she hands him a summons. And then as it gets near to his face, he recognizes the scent of lavender as a particular perfume that he remembers, and so it sends him back into remembering, and we get a flashback, and it's kind of an origin story of sorts as it stands at this point. It brings him back to when he was young and wealthy, and he meets a woman named Abby Horton. She's an older woman, he's meeting with her about a proposal. They're going to build Horton Chemicals, and it'll be kind of a tax shelter for him. But he's also interested in the fact that it'll be able to help people with their medical research and stuff. So they make a deal, and then over time, they just get along really well, to the point that even though there's the age difference, there's rumors about them, and they're just amused by it. But she says, if she was 20 years younger, she'd be after him. And he responds, "Yeah, but if you were 20 years younger, I wouldn't be able to keep up with you." But he does meet her daughter, and they kind of hit it off immediately. And Abby is fine with, you know, she seems happy about it because she likes Oliver. And they get along really well at first, Oliver and her daughter. But then they kind of like end up realizing they don't have a whole lot in common. Like she wants to go to the opera, he wants to go to see a boxing match. He likes jazz, she likes classical. She wants to go to the ballet, and basically it ends up like, you know, if we can't figure out anything to do with each other, maybe we shouldn't be together. And so then we get to the kind of familiar. He's on a yacht, or not a yacht, but like he's on a big boat, and he encounters some pirates. He thinks it's a joke at first, but they throw him overboard. He ends up on the island, yada yada. You know, he comes back eventually and starts acting as Green Arrow. Loses his fortune. And he reunites with Abby, and she says, you know, I could give you some money to get started again and as a loan. And he says, no way, you know, this is like a blessing in disguise kind of thing, and money's not that important. And, you know, we see a couple panels that show him, you know, doing his adventuring with Green Lantern and Black Canary and stuff, catching us up to the present. So he's being, the summons that he's received from this woman is a request that he attend the reading of the will of Abigail Horton tomorrow, the following night. So fast forward to the meeting. He goes in and sees Cindy again for the first time. It's a little bit of an awkward reunion. She introduces him to her husband. He says, you know, how do you do? Cynthia's talked often about you, and Oliver's surprised to hear that. So then they do the reading of the will, and they go through Abby's son and Cynthia, her daughter, her brother. You know, she gives them, she's got a lot of money. You know, she gives 2 million, 4 million, 3 million. And then she says, it says, to my friend Oliver Queen, I leave the crystal goblets he so admired. And Oliver's says, they'll be in good hands, Abby. But then he continues, and the sum of $34 million, and my controlling stock in Horton Chemicals. It's my last wish that he succeed me as president and chairman of the board. So Oliver's shocked, and her family's pissed off, and but apparently the woman that had brought the summons to Oliver, a junior partner in this firm that's reading the will, Miss Wagner, we learn her name is, she was probably the last person to see Abby alive, and she witnessed, as well as two servants, witnessed her making these modifications to her will and signing off. And so the family's questioning the legality, and they're stating, you know, they tell them, well, you can fight it if you want, but it'll be a waste of your time. And Oliver's listening as all this is going on, and then finally he outbursts, you know, I'm not sure I even want it, but I'm damn sure Abby didn't want any of you to have it. He says, I've seen more grief on Thanksgiving, and that was for the turkey. You can all go straight to hell. And he storms out, basically just disgusted with the way that the family is more concerned with her money than the fact that she's gone. So it seems like it's just after he's talking to Black Canary, to Dinah, about the fact that, you know, he really doesn't want the money, and he's just learned the way that, you know, owning things end up owning you. And when he lost his money, he was the happiest he's ever been. And as they're talking, there's an explosion in the building where he was just at. So Diana goes off to warn the neighbors, and Ollie suits up, and figuring that whoever planted the bomb was after him. And so he looks to see there's a crowd gathering, so he figures anybody that's running away is probably the one that's responsible. So he catches up with the guy, and it's just like kind of a guy in a trench coat and a hat. He gives in pretty easily once Ollie knocks his gun away with an arrow, threatens to beat him up. He says, I'm going to talk. And he says he was hired. No kidding. Who hired you? And he starts to say, he thinks I don't know basically who he really is, but he's really, and then something in his pocket starts beeping and he screams, no, I wasn't going to tell. And then he's just, there's this huge electrical, explosion kind of, Holy Hannah, Ollie says. The night air suddenly suffused the odor of charred polyester and charred flesh. So Ollie thinks to himself, you know, if somebody's willing to kill for this money, it seems to me that that person is probably the last one should have him, or that should have it. So there's only one thing he can do. And then the issue ends with somebody approaching Abigail Horton's office in Horton Chemicals. They walk in, they say, morning, everyone. I'll have a coffee and a Danish, okay? And they're like, who the hell is this guy? And the guy says, don't go overboard on the cleaning, okay? I like things a little messy. Reminds me of home. And Ollie hops into her chair and kicks his feet up on the desk. So it was a cool issue. I liked it. It was pretty entertaining. I mean, even with getting into, like, you know, some familiar aspects of his origin story. I thought it was like they did a good job of, Barr did a good job of presenting his friendship with Abby and with a limited amount of space, you know, just kind of he was pretty effective in getting you to sort of feel that and feel their connection and the whole thing. So. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
Sweet.
Well, do I have one here?
Do you?
I do. Wonder Woman number 322 from 1984. Dan Mishkin was the writer and Don Heck was the penciler. This picks up, I'm guessing, just seconds after issue 321, which I don't own. But Diana has some sort of contraption on her head that apparently is giving her memories back. And what you learn at the beginning of this issue is that her mother, Hippolyta, had somehow erased many of her memories in an effort to spare her some grief from Steve Trevor dying. And apparently he had not died once in the past, but had died two times. So, and yet he's also, you learn that he's also there on Paradise Island at the time. And Diana's very, very upset, and Hippolyta is very apologetic, but Diana is not having any of it. And Eros, the god Eros, is there as well, and he reveals that he had been Steve Trevor in the past. And Steve Trevor is basically saying, what are you guys talking about? How is this possible? You're telling me that I've died not once but twice. Why don't I remember any of this? So on and so forth. And he says, am I Steve Trevor? Am I not? And Hippolyta explains that yes, you are, but you're not the only one. The first one has died twice and has gone, and you're not him. And then she explains all of the different parallel Earths and says that he comes from a parallel Earth, and that's why he doesn't remember any of this, because he had not died. And he asks, how come he doesn't notice any difference between the Earth he came from and this one? And she says that his memories had been altered by some sort of mists, a goddess and some mists. So this is very, very dense to just get into. It's constantly referring to things that happened 5 issues ago, things that happened over 100 issues ago. So very, very hard to kind of get into this. But basically, Eros is still remembering that he was Steve Trevor is immortal, and that he's still in love with Diana, and that she's belongs to him. And then it kind of cuts scenes to Washington, D.C. And Chris, I know that you're more well versed in some of this era's Wonder Woman, I believe, but there's a little green alien with in a pink suit. He's got antenna. Are you familiar with this alien at all? It's like a
It's
mini.
Gizmo from the Flintstones.
That he looks a little bit like
Yeah.
Gizmo, but he has blonde hair instead of a big helmet. But I don't know what he's doing there. But apparently he's got indications that there's going to be an invasion, so he needs to try to find somebody.
What's
But of
the issue number
course,
again?
this is 322 that I'm reading.
322.
He's got a little bit of a subplot that comes and goes throughout this issue. But basically, he's trying to find either Wonder Woman or Steve. And of course, they're not there. So he is running around, and later he ends up finding somebody else. But I guess they call him, gosh, I want to say Gizmo, but maybe I'm thinking of the actual
I know
Earth.
it's Glitch.
Glitch, thank you. Thanks, Glitch, yes.
I had to look it up, but I have seen this guy before.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on there, but so there's a little bit of a subplot involving him, but then it quickly goes back to Paradise Island, and there's more exposition. But basically, Eros has gone, to get to the point of it, Eros has now gone mad, and he is fighting Steve Trevor over Diana. And of course, I'm sure you could guess that Steve Trevor, being just a regular mortal man, it's not going well against Eros. He employs Wonder Woman's invisible jet to knock Eros over, but Eros has all the powers of a god and actually just enlarges himself to be like giant size, and just grabs the plane and wants to squish Steve Trevor when Wonder Woman comes to the rescue. The purple ray has been damaged in this fight and is starting to and may actually explode. When we go back to Washington, D.C., there's a woman named Miss Abernathy who has brought her daughter to the Pentagon to talk to a general, and she asks her daughter Eloise to wait outside. What's his name? Glitch, you said? Glitch runs past Eloise. Apparently, he's supposed to be invisible, but Eloise sees him and runs after him. And then, so he starts telling her about this impending alien invasion. And I believe this actually goes into the invasion, that invasion, what do you call it, mini or something that came about as well.
Crossover.
Yeah, the crossover, thanks. So there's an epic battle between Eros and Wonder Woman, but then she has to kind of stop what she's doing because they call her over because the purple ray, even though it's a healing ray, it's going to explode and cause actual damage. So they end up getting that under control when Eros grabs Steve Trevor, throws him to the ground, and although he's still alive, he's on death's door. So Diana's very upset, has had enough of it, and starts coming after Eros. He starts trying to shoot his arrows of passion at her, but she's blocking every shot with her bracelets, knocks him down, grabs Steve Trevor, and even though the purple ray has been damaged, they think that they can go ahead and focus it on Steve to heal him. So as they begin to do so, Eros is still insane and rushes over to try to kill Steve before the purple ray can heal Steve Trevor, and they both get bathed in the purple ray's a beam, which not only revives Steve Trevor but also cures Eros's insanity. And so at that point, he apologizes for all of the damage he's called or caused rather, and he goes, he's gonna go back to the gods. Wonder Woman is still extremely angry with her mother and says that at this point, she's not going to be around to help rebuild Paradise Island because she's going to go back to the main world, and it's going to be some time before she finds it in herself to forgive her mother for interfering with her memories and making her forget everything about her past. Especially, she says how she had been under some amnesia back when she had lost powers, if I'm remembering correctly. So that's kind of how it wraps up. Steve and Wonder Woman fly off of Paradise Island in the invisible jet. Eros goes his way. There's a mortal woman there too that was there from the very first page with Steve Trevor. She's not named once in the entire comic book, so I don't know who that was. But she says she's staying, and they say farewell. And what I thought was interesting is in the letters page, this was actually, and granted, it was only seven more issues before the very last issue that it was relaunched after Crisis, but this was the last issue of Wonder Woman as a monthly series. Apparently, the sales were so low that they ended up started going bi-monthly, starting with issue 323. Of course, as I said, that only lasted until 329, where it was canceled completely and relaunched with a new number one. But I thought that was interesting. And Mike, if you look in the comic base, I mean, you see that although Dan Mishkin may have written, the past 30 or so issues, I mean, if you go before that, I mean, it's like just a cavalcade of writers and artists. It's like they never had any type of consistency, really. So it was interesting to see that the sales had dipped so low that Wonder Woman is actually going to be a bi-monthly comic.
Yeah, they had a. Well, they had the Dennis O'Neill era, and then
Yeah.
they had the Jerry
Jerry
Conway.
Conway was on it for some time. Yeah. But it seemed like nobody really stayed on it for a long period of time. But I guess that's the same as anywhere else. But I mean, this issue, just to jump into, it was really, really dense. And even to the point of that woman who, I mean, is there in the action from the first page to the last, and she literally is not named once, so I have no idea who it was. It was kind of bizarre. So yeah, I mean, I found I I got this issue at the comic show that I went to last week, and you know, I'm like, oh, you know, this is cool. I'll pick this up, and you know, I wanted to read it for today, but yeah, I mean, it was hard to know really what was going on or even what they were trying to wrap up here.
I would love to shop comics with you. I would love to, because I think that you get the same joy out of it that I get. Yeah.
Yeah, and
a lot of people I hang out with don't get that. Like,
sure. Yeah.
I mean, I like to go through Artist Alley as well as anyone, but one of the things I like to do is to browse comics.
And you know what I've been enjoying lately, and it's funny, but even these smaller, like the one last week was just a Hotel Con.
Yeah. I would have went. It's just too far. Like, I was supposed to go
the one for
one
today.
In Denver. Yeah, it was just a 1 day, but they had great vendors. I mean, they had the same vendor that I bought all those Mary Marvel and WoW comics from, the Golden Age ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been buying a lot of Fawcett comics.
Who did you buy those from, just out of curiosity?
Oh, God dang it. You're going to make me look it up. But I can't remember his name.
But it's not Harley Yee, is it?
No.
So that's how he's going to be there.
I bought from him before.
Harley Myers.
He's a big guy.
Harley's playing with their toys.
I hear that.
But yeah, anyhow, some of these small ones, it's fun to go to because there's a lot of $1 and $2 boxes at these types of comics.
It's weird that my comic shop is starting to put together a dollar box, and I'm finding stuff in there that I need.
Oh, like, that's
there
nice.
A couple of Lobo minis that I needed, and I never collected the main Lobo series, so I got some of those. I found like this really nice copy of An Unknown Soldier I didn't have. And what else did I find in that thing? I found a couple of Marvel Zorros, and I've been into Zorro lately. I didn't even know that Marvel published a Zorro, to tell you the truth.
I picked
those up. So yeah, I've been loving digging in, finding what I can find.
It's fun. And you know, I mean, and sometimes, depending on what they're focused on, you might be able to find a lot of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of boxes that are all like 90s and 2000s, and it's very rare that I'll find anything of value that I'm interested in. But then there's other ones that just have, you know, they're all like mid 80s and up, and I'll find a lot of stuff that I don't happen to own. So it's gonna be a lot of fun.
I was looking at my Wonder Woman collection, and I have every single Wonder Woman comic from 175 up to present.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so that goes back to 1968. And then my earliest Wonder Woman, is, let's see, is that it? 47.
47? That's
old. That's my earliest Wonder Woman.
5, 6. I'm counting mine. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Out of the run from 1 to 329, I own 14 issues. That's it.
Wow. Yeah,
that's
I have
all.
The whole,
I got nothing.
I have the whole thing, but Wonder Woman is one of my favorite characters. Like, I didn't
like
really
the George
get
Perez
her.
One. Yeah. Then I started getting it. Every
yeah,
single
I,
one,
I, ha- but... I have, yeah, I have everything after that, but I am missing one issue that I can't believe I'm missing. I was scrolling through, and it's one of the Denny O'Neil, which I'm very fond of that run, and I am missing one of those issues, and I was pretty shocked to see it. It's 181, which has a Mark Grenwald and Mark Evanier letter in the letter column.
Oh, that's
Those
cool.
are two big creators.
Yeah, they are. Chris, you have quite a few Wonder Woman, right? Or you had?
I still do. Flash, I'll probably, like, at the very least, keep my Flash and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I have more. My Flash's collection's better than my Wonder Woman, but
Because I remember when we were shopping together, there was that, I think it might have been a $3 a book, but then if you got like $10, it was like, they give you $2 a book. You were getting a lot of Wonder, this was a couple of years ago, you're getting a lot of Wonder Woman, I remember.
Yeah, a lot of what I have is from that time, I think. I have like about 40, I have about 50 issues from the first volume. And then like maybe like half of volume two or something like that. But I worked on Flash pretty exclusively, like, well, not exclusively, but as far as like a really big long run. And then like Wonder Woman was a more recent. I started Wonder Woman kind of after that.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Very
All
cool.
right, my next one is something that you might be shocked I don't own, but I don't, and I read it off of the, but a transaction has been put into place, so I will own it, probably in a week or two.
A
What was it?
transaction has been
I
put
didn't hear
into
Allie
place.
came in to tell me she's eating her lunch.
He didn't say yet,
Oh, okay.
mister.
Jeez, wow.
It's from 1980, the Untold Legend of the Batman, which has John Byrne art inked by Jim Aparo, and the writer is Len Wein. So it's all creators in my wheelhouse. And for those of you interested, this is available on the DC Universe app, all three issues, and this was phenomenally. I just didn't understand. I had no idea what this was, but historically, this is like a super gem. And the way it opens up is Batman receives this package. Alfred brings it down. He opens it up, and it's this old bat costume that his father wrote wore to a costume party. And it's very reminiscent of the Morrison, I forget what that doctor's name is. But that same costume that he wears in the Morrison run. And it's all tattered. And he's like, what the hell? How did this person get into the Batcave to begin with, take it out of the case, and then leave an awful message for me in the case? And it's sort of like he's trying to remember how the costume came about and what happened. And he remembers that his father went to a costume party. He told him this story. And in that costume party, a bunch of burglars broke in and they stole stuff. And they said, we're going to steal a doctor too. So that they stole Thomas Wayne. And they brought him back to their gangster place. And there was one gangster there that was shot. And this name is kind of really important, although I don't know if it holds a lot of weight in current continuity. There's a couple of names I'm going to throw out. But his name is Lou Moxon, okay? And this Lou Moxon guy, Thomas Wayne actually took out because he said, you know what's going to happen is he thought to himself, I'm going to heal this guy and then he's going to shoot me. So he ended up taking him out. And he got arrested. So he's pretty bitter. But the thing about this Lou Moxon guy, the way this is written, is he hired somebody to kill Thomas and Martha Wayne. Who do you think he hired? He hired Joe Chill to kill them. So now we have this Lou Moxon in the continuity canon I don't remember ever hearing about. But this story is about recalling that. The other thing that this brought into canon, which I haven't seen before, and if I have seen it, it's probably something I just didn't remember, or if somebody talked about it on a podcast, I didn't remember it. But early in his career, young Bruce is seeking tutelage from somebody, and he finds this great detective called Harvey Harris. And the way he goes undercover is in a Robin costume. So it shows that he donned the Robin costume before he ever put on the Batman costume to train under this guy. And this Harvey Harris knew immediately who he was. But he learned all this detective work, and then he thought he was going to become a cop. He went to the university to become a cop, and he realized that he couldn't follow all the rules that the cops had to go through in order to do his job. So that's how he sort of became who he is today, to seek out this killer. So he finds this Lou Moxon guy that's responsible for the death of his parents, and he confronts him, and he actually gets him arrested. And they put him under a lie detector test, and this guy has no recollection whatsoever that he killed Martha Wayne or had any connection to Joe Chill. So they sort of release him, and Batman's like, "What the hell? You know, this is the guy. How did he pass this lie detector test?" So he did some research. He found out that he had amnesia. So what he had to do was have him come out of this amnesia. He got hit in the head a few years back. He doesn't remember anything past a certain amount of years. So he confronted him as Batman, and he found out that he does remember. And then he started hunting him down, but he got away. Little did he know, he ran into this Lou Moxon guy ran into a bunch of gangsters that absolutely hate Batman. And he told these gangsters, "You gotta help me. You gotta hide me. Batman's after me. I didn't realize, but I created him." And then these gangsters are like, "You son of a bitch. You created the Batman? I am so pissed at you." And they just all pulled out their guns and they shot this guy to death before Batman could end up finding him again. And so now he's working with Alfred and trying to figure out who invaded the cave and how his father's costume got out. And that should be continued in issue two. The other thing that was interesting about this is it talked about Bruce Wayne's uncle, and something I didn't know about either. But when his parents died, he got put under his uncle's care and was raised by a woman, and her name is Miss Chilton. And the thing that's interesting about this Miss Chilton is she felt guilty because her brother is Joe Chill. So she started raising Bruce, and Bruce has like really fond memories of her. And in fact, he said in the comic book, "If it wasn't for her, I don't know if I could have come out of this depression or funk that I was in." Way to go, Barb. You have to sneeze again in the podcast. But this is a
Always ruin
really
it.
fascinating comic book. Bless you.
So are these all original stories? Because I'm number one, but I don't remember it, and I know it's only three issues. Is
Yeah.
are these is this an original story? I always thought that they were like reprints or
No, these are
something.
original stories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I think he was supposed to do more Batman, but something happened with John Byrne. I can't remember if he went back to Marvel at that time. I think that's what happened, is he went back to Marvel. He came over to DC very briefly in 1980. They had all kinds of plans for him, but something happened at Marvel and he just moved back over. So yeah, this is a true gem. And once I read this, I was like, I have to have this. So I should have that coming, the three issues coming to me fairly soon. But it is pretty doggone awesome.
Nice. That's cool.
Sweet.
I forgot who's next.
Don't have anything else.
Oh, well then I guess that'll be me.
There you go.
All right, the last one I have is Detective Comics number 591 by Mr. Alan Grant and John Wagner, with art by Norm Breyfogle.
Ah, my favorite.
Yeah. So I'm going through, I had a few gaps years ago in some of my Detective Comics. So I filled those, and now I'm getting around to reading through all the way through and past the gaps. So I only have a few more issues. I think my last gaps were right before 600. So I'm going to read through that. And then I've been reading Batman and Detective since I filled all those gaps. And so now I'm kind of at the tail end. So this is just a one and done issue. It's another good one. Wagner and Grant had recently taken over around 583, which was actually the first appearance of the ventriloquist in Scarface. So this one is a story of there's a art collector who specializes in obtaining antiquities, and he likes to display these, and he's the foremost collector of ancient art, and he's having like a charity event where he's got a lot of this stuff on display, and actually Bruce Wayne is actually kind of like I don't recall, but kind of not, I guess, hosting it in terms of monetarily, where this guy has all of his collection out, and there's this bone, an actual bone that's been carved and painted and stuff, and it's from Ayers Rock in Australia, and it's from literally like 46,000 BC, so thousands and thousands of years ago, like 48,000 years ago. And so he's got this, and he has when he grabs it to show it off, he starts getting dizzy, and he said that he got a sudden chill, but now he's okay. So what it turns out is this this native from Australia, an Aborigine, has come from Australia and is hunting down to get this piece back. And he managed to track the three mercenaries who had actually obtained this this power bone for this rich guy, who's his name is Cary Rollo. And so he makes his way, the Aborigine makes his way to this bar where these three mercenaries they're playing cards, and he comes in, and it sounds like at least one or more of these guys are from Australia themselves. And so they start making disparaging comments to the native, and he starts asking, you know, where this is, and that, you know, that they stole this and didn't have the right to it. They start shooting at him, but he throws a spear through one guy's hand. He knocks out the other two, and the one guy with the spear through his hand, he starts questioning, and he gets the information that he needs, and then last thing you see is raising this stone club over his head, and it's clear that he's gonna hit this guy. So we go back to this charity event, and Bruce Wayne collects a $50,000 check from Rollo on behalf of a charity for poor children in Gotham, and he immediately excuses himself and becomes the Batman so he can patrol the city. So immediately upon changing, he hears police sirens and goes to this bar and sees that two men are unconscious and one has been killed. And he notices that the marks, some paint marks that have been left on the killed man's body, are Aboriginal. And he's like, well, is this just a coincidence? Because we just saw this native Australian's art at this gathering. And so now he wants to go to see Rollo to see if he can shed some light on it. As he's going back to this high rise where Rollo was, he notices and the Aboriginally actually jumping up and grabbing the bottom part of like an outside glass elevator. And the Aborigine makes his way into the building, knocks out a couple security guards, and confronts Rollo with his theft just as Batman arrives himself. So they start talking and how basically Rollo had bankrolled these mercenaries to get a hold of this artifact at any cost, and that he actually ended up killing. They try to offer these guards, these Aborigine guards in Australia, money. They try to pay them off to get this artifact, and they refused because it wasn't theirs to give away. It belongs to the entire community, and so they killed them. And they grabbed the artifact and brought it back with Rollo's blessing. He said any means necessary. So he wants to kill Rollo and get the artifact back. And Batman's basically saying, listen, you know, what he did was against the law. He needs to be tried in court. And the Aborigine says, so I guess we're going to fight. And so they start fighting each other. However, in the middle of the fight, Rollo picks up the stone club that had been dropped and hits the Aborigine across the head. And Batman basically stops Rollo, and the Aborigine says, you know, I can see, Batman, that you're a man of honor, but this isn't going to fly. He's got to pay for what he did. And Batman again reiterates that yes, Rollo has to pay, but so does the Aborigine, because he's killed a man as well. And, you know, I'm sorry about this, but, you know, you both are going to have to face justice. And the Aborigine says, you know, white man's justice. He's like, you know, where has that been for the past 200 years? And he rushes past Batman and grabs Rollo and just crashes right through the window. And, Batman makes his way outside, and Rollo is dead on the ground, and there's absolutely no he doesn't see the Aborigine anywhere, and he notices a line on the flagpole outside. So he's like, is it possible that he got away? And as Batman's searching for him, he happens to see he hears a smash from a window, and he makes his way to a travel agency that had been trying to give people cheap rates to Australia for their 200th birthday. And it has been changed. The sign has been changed from happy 200th birthday to Australia to happy 50,000th birthday to the people. And so he knows that the Aborigine had made it alive and is out there somewhere. And if he can find him, he's still going to bring him to justice. But it says, you know, because he's the Batman, and then that's the end of the issue. So it was a good, there's been quite a few that I've been reading lately with Breyfogle and Grant and Wagner. These have been really good stories, and this was no exception. I've been enjoying this little run here with Wagner, Grant, and Breyfogle. Some really good stories.
It's actually my favorite. Like, that's my favorite Batman. The Grant and Breyfogle run.
Yeah, they're so good. It's been really
entertaining. That's when I was like, I've got to pay attention to this series. Like, that's when they were together, that's when I was more pumped to collect the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can totally see that. I mean, like I said, I mean, their first one was a two-parter, which created the Ventriloquist. Then right after that, had the first appearance of Rat. You remember Ratcatcher?
Yeah.
So there's a two-part Ratcatcher. That was his
first
appearance.
That one's gone up in price because of rumors of movies.
Who, the Ratcatcher?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. And then after that, they had like a cool story with like the homeless and stuff like that. And then he just traveled to London for a one-shot issue against terrorists. And now this one versus, you know, with, you know, Australian Aborigine story. And I don't know what's next. It looks like another two-parter. But some really good stories. Really, really entertaining stories.
So, so, yeah. so I I have one more, but you know I'm lightning fast.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got the so I own this in two versions. I own it in a hardcover and I own it in singles, but I've never read it. And I read it digitally. So that explains a lot, but Marvel Unlimited had it, and I was like, oh, this. In my philosophy of, reading 6 to 12 comics a month, I was like, okay, I gotta pick something. I did pick out two gems I didn't own. The Vision by Geoff Johns and Ivan Reis. It's interesting that he still works with Ivan Reis.
Yeah.
Also Geoff Johns and oh man, why am I forgetting? I read The Thing by him and Scott Collins, so you got the creative team of The Flash there. They did The Thing Freak Show and they did a Vision miniseries.
Wow.
They were called Marvel Icons and really good series, by the way. One involves the Skrulls and the Kree and the Thing having he basically gets the. The Wrecker cracks him, which is pretty cool because I always like the Wrecking Crew. I just love them. I don't know why. I think I was introduced to the Wrecking Crew way back in the Defenders, and I was always fascinated that these characters existed. And they sort of, at this time, the Thing can turn back into Ben Grimm, and I don't know if it's like technology imagery thing or if he like physically can change, but they crack him and, he can no longer change, so he goes through this depression cycle and says, "You know what? I'm gonna go to Myrtle Beach. That's a good place to hang, play putt-putt. I've been to Myrtle Beach, so I know this. And go to the beach." And he ends up getting into shenanigans with the Kree and the Skrulls in this weird town that he wasn't even going to. But that was one, and then the Vision one deals with him kind of losing his memory and remembering his past with the scientists that created him, which is pretty fascinating. So those two I read digitally, and but I want to talk about the 12. This is a J. Michael Straczynski one with art by Chris Weston. And what they did is they took a bunch of Golden Age characters: the Phantom Reporter, Electro, Black Widow, the Laughing Mask. The Blue Blade, which is like a shirtless guy, he's pretty interesting. Dynamic Man, Mastermind, Excello, Mr. E, which it, that's also an interesting one because DC has a Mr. E as well in the Trenchcoat Brigade. You know, the John Constantine, Dr. Occult characters. They usually call them the Trenchcoat Brigade. But, this focuses during World War II when the Nazis are sort of taken out, and this group of heroes is going after Hitler himself, and they end up going into a room, and there's this Nazi colonel in there, and he ends up capturing them and freezing them, and later on in the future in Berlin, Germany. They're doing construction. I guess it's an American construction company because the Americas want to use them. They start digging and they find their bodies frozen, much like Captain America, but in tubes. And they're like, we need to reawaken these guys. And they do reawaken them, and it must the 12 must have happened. This even seems like it's we shouldn't cover it because it seems like it just happened, like this stuff just came out. But it's 2008, and when you think about it, we're past, it meets the 10-year criteria, which sort of blows me away that it came out that long ago and I haven't read it. But
I've never even heard of this before. Somehow I
oh,
totally
y if
didn't
you
even see this.
do you still have Marvel Unlimited? Just do me a favor. Load it and go look at the artwork. It will blow you away, man. This Chris Weston artwork, holy moly. But anyway, when they first come out of the freeze, they decide to trick him. But one of the guys doesn't fall for it. It's like, the radio's playing, but there's no commercials. And they're playing the Andrews Sisters, so I'm like, yeah, because I'm a huge fan of the Andrews Sisters. I listen to a lot of 40s music, if you don't know that. But I listen to a lot of big band and and stuff like that. So I was like, it's like the Andrews sisters were playing in the background. The guy wakes up and he's like, I wonder why there's no commercials. That's strange. And then the nurse comes in. She's wearing a dress that you would typically see in the 40s. But he noticed her ears. She has three ear piercing. And he's like, what the hell's going on here? There's just something weird. So they end up finding that they're men out of time. And our government wants to use them because of their ideals. They think they can control them. And during this time, the Civil War just happened. So our government is very... They want to form a team that they can control because, you know, with all the identities, Spider-Man releasing his identity, Tony Stark, and then them trying to sign that thing where everybody had to, this team came about. But it's really fascinating. For those of you that have Marvel Unlimited, I highly recommend you go over there and check it out. Really good story. And if you like Jeff Johns and Ivan Reese, check out The Vision. And Jeff Johns and Scott Collins, check out The Thing, Freak Show. Those are also available. So I read my share of digital comics on Marvel Unlimited just in the last night. I read 9 books or so.
I guess so. You know, I don't think I realized that Jeff Johns did like stuff for Marvel like this.
Oh, he did some great Avengers stories, man. He was first at DC, and he did Stars and Stripes and did some other stuff, and then he left DC for like 2 years. It might have been a little over 2 years.
What Avengers stuff did he do?
Oh my God, he did an awesome Hank Pym and Wasp. I remember it distinctively. Very sexual, by the way. But if you look at Avengers Volume 1, I wonder who his artist was. I'm real curious to see now. But he also must have did some minis, and these minis came out of it. He also did some other stuff.
Did he actually leave DC, or I think he was just freelance, like he didn't have an exclusive with anybody?
He may have. He had done quite a bit at DC, and then he left. But I don't know if he was ever, like, you're right, I don't know if he was as exclusive as he is now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's becoming less common lately, but...
That's because I don't think they want to pay the... When you're exclusive, they actually pay health insurance and stuff. At least DC does.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good deal.
I can't find it now.
Yeah, I have no idea what he...
I'm going to have to look now.
But yeah, I mean, he was just the writer on regular Avengers for a little while.
Right? So it couldn't be Volume 1 then, right?
I thought it was Volume 1. Well, maybe it was right after the Busick stuff.
Yep, there it is. Yep, it's Volume 3. He started writing on Issue 57. I mean, yeah. I own all these. It just, I guess I don't remember today that he had written. I mean, I knew who he was, obviously. I was a big fan of his, but.
Oh, yeah, he had done Scott Collins there, too, and Steven Sadowski, who he did JSA with. So.
Yeah, he did a good 20 issues.
Gary Frank, mm-hmm. who's doing Doomsday Clock with him right now, and he did the Action Comics with the Legion of Three Worlds.
Yeah.
Oliver Coppell. So he tends to, like, Ivan Reese. So he tends to stick with... his artists that he likes, you know.
Yeah, he's got his collaborators that he enjoys.
He's got them. But man,
oh, that's interesting.
Which one issue? Oh, this is when Jack of Hearts blew up the mansion. This is awesome. This is some good stuff. This had some great Ant-Man stuff and Jack of Hearts. This
I feel like I'm going to have to revisit this stuff. I don't remember it at all.
Well, if you want to revisit it and we could cover it, I'd love to revisit this, his run.
I'm going to have to write myself a note, because I have all of these issues. And I've read them.
In.
I just don't remember them.
Well, so. I think that will wrap us up for today. You got any closing words, anybody?
I love everybody.
You and your accents this morning. I don't know what's going on.
No, I just thanks for getting together, guys. It's been a bit
fun
since the three of us have had been able to do that. So
yeah, if that con was here in the Springs, I would have went just to shop, but it's not.
And how long did you say the drive is?
It's about an hour and a half plus the weather. They're doing like road construction, so that adds like an extra 20 minutes, and it's like, it's a horrible drive to Denver right now.
Oh, you know what I wanted to tell you before we... So I don't know who does it or whatever, but they have like the best cities to live in.
Yeah.
And Houston was number one for the third year in a row for some reason, but then it was Denver and then Colorado Springs was number three.
There you go. You guys should come on
down. In the whole country.
The whole country. Yes. Come on
Nowhere
down.
In Western New York was anywhere on the list, Chris.
Oh, that's a shock.
I know.
Join me. Come on down.
That's probably on the worst, like, list of worst places.
Well, I don't know.
All right. Well, you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com website. We're also on Facebook. At least I am at Geek Brunch Podcast. You can click the like button on Facebook, and I'll reply to you if you leave a note on any episode threads. And
Forum for Geeks.
Yeah, Forum for Geeks. You have to have a secret passcode to get in, but there is Forum for Geeks. And our Twitter handles are at MythMakingETC.
Do you even find the website? It's on the dark web.
It is on the dark web, and it costs you some
of those.
You have
to subscribe to the Patreon.
Yep.
We have at least 1,000, though, so that's pretty good. At MythMakingETC on the Twitter, at Mike Myers Brunch, and at Rob Krieger. And that's how to get a hold of us on the Twitters. That's probably the best place to get a hold of us, actually, if you want to talk to us.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And we'll hopefully talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks. See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.